Blog Talk Radio.
You got to get up every morning with a smile on your face and show the world all the love in your heart. Then people gonna treat you better. You're gonna find, yes you will, that you're beautiful.
Good morning, everybody, and good afternoon if we're in that part of the country. Welcome to Your Important to Sarah with Sarah Toe. I am very excited who we're going to be speaking with today. I absolutely adore hearing inspirational stories of courage, of tenacity, of people placing a self-worth upon themselves, and not blindly just accepting things that are told to them, but fighting back. And this is certainly one of those stories today. I'm going to give you the number to call, folks, if you do wish to call in and ask him questions in the last 10 minutes of the show. That will be 1-877-296-0345. That's 1-877-296-0345. And you may very well want to ask this guy questions because, my God, what a journey. Jerry Smith, does God give us more than we can bear? That's the book that he wrote. His doctors told him, you have a death sentence and there is no hope anywhere in the world. Well, imagine being told that. Jerry is a story of never giving up and never giving in. He was deserted by his mother, grew up in foster homes, but still had a good education. He went on to achieve a Bachelor of Science degree, worked as an accountant for 10 years, became a realtor, made the Millionaires Club, married his love, had 5 children. Well, it all sounds just wonderful, doesn't it? But Jerry has known such adversity, death, loss, and tragedy along the way. And when finally in his late 50s, he found equilibrium, peaceful joy by letting go of the pain and the anguish, the death sentence came. He was told he had pulmonary fibrosis. That's a disease of the lungs, folks. Jerry will go more into it. And that there was no cure, and he had to just really go home and prepare to die. Little side note here. By the way, this is a preventable disease, and we'll discuss that later. While he was not having any of this, he decided to fight for his life. He was not going to give up. So this is what he did. He faced his challenges. He took ownership of his choices. And he's here today to tell us how he is still living 8 years after the sentence. Only Jerry can tell it best, so let's bring Jerry on. Hello, Jerry. How are you today?
No, sir. I'm doing great. Just better than good, as Zig Ziglar would say.
Sorry, you're going to have to be just a bit clearer there, Jerry.
Okay. I'm saying I'm doing better than good. What my friend Zig Ziglar always said every time he met you, and you always say, I'm doing better than good.
Well, as our producer was saying, is that we have two different accents here today. We have a hodgepodge Dallas accent, and we have this British South African Canadian accent. So we'll talk slowly so everybody gets to know what we have to say here today. So, Jerry, I mean, your story really touched my heart. It really is very, very inspiring. So I'm going to hand it over to you for the next 4 or 5 minutes where you give people the synopsis of your story and how it led up to that diagnosis.
Okay. I'd like to start off on a positive note, talking about how every morning now, I wake up and the first thing I think about, wow, it is great to be alive. And once they hear my story, they'll know why. My routine is I wake up and I just automatically think, wow, it's just great. Another day, it's great to be alive. And I get up and have a quick cup of coffee. My wife and I go car walk around our entire residence or subdivision and come back in and then cool off for a few minutes while we watch a little film, inspirational type film. And then by that time, I'm ready to get up and start getting dressed for the day. And there is nothing more invigorating than that walk and seeing, and it's every morning and seeing the sun, you know, coming up. But In any case, it wasn't always like that. It wasn't seem like that terribly long ago that I was just depressed all the time. Every waking minute I was depressed. And it started off, starting back in 2004, I was diagnosed with this incurable lung disease, as you mentioned, called pulmonary fibrosis, and they said that there is no known cause or cure or treatment anywhere, and about all you can do is go home and wait to die, that the average lifespan is 2 to 3 years from the date of the diagnosis. So when I got that diagnosis, I went home that Friday afternoon, and I was just full of despair. I had every kind of emotion. I was angry. I was scared to death. I was so depressed I couldn't do anything. And I sat there and I started even screaming at God, God, why did you allow this? After all you put me through, and in doing that, I started reliving my life. And it started with my grandmother dying at age 31 during child delivery, and my mother born a deaf mute and abandoned because she was handicapped. Nobody wanted her. When she's grown, she's raped. I'm born of that rape, and nobody would take her or me, so she ended up abandoning me. And then I moved around 4 or 5 times with different people, and less than 6 months each time. And so eventually then it came down to the fact that my mother came back into the picture and tried to take me when she had gotten married, and her husband divorced her to get rid of me. And so she could do at that point was just to finally take me to the welfare office. And they, of course, told her that they could not take me unless she would sign a release so I could be placed for adoption. She refused to do so. I found out later on. But so she had a friend drive us to the welfare office early the next morning, pinned a note on my shirt with my name on it, told me to go up and knock on the door. And when I did, and I turned around, the car was driving off, and I was 4 years old. And I was here again for 25 years. And then I grew up in foster care, several homes, and I worked my way through college, got married my senior year, and then years later, my wife was murdered by a drug addict. I married again, and then my grandson turned 15, and he was killed on his 15th birthday in a car accident. I was still suffering from depression all the way up to about age of about 52. So I was going through depression all the time still. My second in-laws, they knew they didn't like me before they ever met me. And so they rejected me too, and it took about 15 years for them to come around. Now, we've been married 38 years, and nothing ever happened to me. But they didn't accept me, like I said, for about 15 years. So they were causing problems. My depression was causing problems. My hate and anger that I had for the world, of course, was causing a lot of problems. And so my wife and I got to where we were having tremendous problems, and, about 99% was my fault. It was all me. So anyway, then about that time, my grandson, like I said, is killed. And it's like just pulling the plug. That was just like too much, and I went over the edge. And so I attempted suicide, was in a coma for about 6 days. Now, when I came out of that coma, I was about 49 years old. I knew at that point, it was like that attempted suicide was the wake-up call. I have to do something. And so I started exploring things, but, everything pointed to one direction, and that was going to church and hearing in church this very first sermon was that if you're out there and you're angry and you're depressed and all you can do is hate and you can't let go and things like that, when they were talking about me, they were talking to me, then, you have to forgive. That is the only way you will have a chance to be happy, is to get rid of this. And so I wrote a book about all of that. But in any case, so I started working on that. And as I was able to be a little bit successful, I started experiencing some type of happiness that I didn't understand because it was so powerful, but I had never experienced it. And so that became a springboard to really get with it. Because I can tell you right now, most of us, I believe, that do have this problem with anger and resentment, that we hate people that we can't let go of, we don't want to let go of it. I believe that we need it. We want it, we need it, and we think we're getting even or something. But anyway, I learned all that was wrong. But so as I was able to start, it took me almost 3 years And the happiness just grew and grew to where it was the most happiness that I'd ever experienced in my entire life. By that time, I'm 52 years old, and it is unbelievable happiness. And then, so then I start 12 years of the greatest 12 years of my life up until now. And and during that 12 years, I mean, it was just, you know, and the funny thing or the irony of it is that the way I was feeling and the way I'm talking now, you would think that that meant all of a sudden in 12 years I didn't have another problem, not one single problem. Well, of course not. I had problems I had all the time. But you know what? They didn't affect me the same way. It's how you respond, you know. And so I just shrugged them off, adjusted to them, and went on and was just completely happy. So then I have a physical, and chest X-ray says you got spots on your lungs. You better find a pulmonary doctor. I do. I get the diagnosis, and so now I'm sitting in my house, and I have been reliving all of this life history that I just got to talking about. Each step of the way, I blame God for every step. Now, see here, God, you did this. You caused this. You caused this. You caused this. And I was so angry, God. But when I reviewed my life and I got all the way back up to the present time, you would just be surprised. All of a sudden, I was totally calm. I wasn't angry anymore. I wasn't depressed. I was just sitting there with a completely normal feeling, clear mind, just normal. And so it allowed me to say, look at all you've experienced here. Did you give up one time? No. You're not going to give up now. You're not going to give up now. So I said, okay, then what can I do? You know, I see now that God allowed me to do all that venting. And I had to do that to get rid of anger and depression and everything, because you can't think when you're like that. And I had a clear mind, and it said, what am I going to do? Well, let's see. I thought about it a few minutes. I said, well, the only thing I can do, I don't have any money or anything, and that is to get on the Internet and just search for answers. And I could never have done that if I had not gotten rid of all this hate and anger and depression. And so I started about a two-week search for a doctor anywhere that might offer me some hope.
And you found one.
And in doing that, I searched for everything. You know, the good thing about Google is that you can put in any words, any kind of words, and you'll get something. So I tried everything for pulmonary fibrosis, foundations, doctors, treatments, patients, cures, research for 2 weeks. And you know what? I struck out for 2 weeks. Now, after a few days, you start feeling that to give up. I won't give up. And so maybe by night time, I'd say, oh, that's it. I guess I've done everything. But the next morning, I was fired up again, and I started again. So anyway, I worked 2 weeks, and finally, I couldn't even think of words to put in Google. And I said, okay, God, I guess that's it. I have to accept what it's going to be. And I sat there, probably not very long, but it seemed like it. And another thought just popped in my head. And that thought was, have you tried a doctor that has his own laboratory? I look back now, and I know God put that thought in my mind almost as soon as he spoke to me. And I went in there, and boom, I pulled up a doctor in Germany that had a laboratory for 25 years at that time. He had done extensive research of all kinds of cancers. So I immediately get hope in my heart, in mind, so I start calling. Now, you can say it was luck that I found him. Luck that, of all things, I could actually get him on the telephone, and luck that he even spoke English, broken English.
Yes.
But it wasn't luck. None of that was luck. And so I get him on the phone. I'm feeling positive and hopeful. Dr. Keith, I said, told him what I had. Do you know anything about pulmonary fibrosis? He says, no. All I know is I've heard about it, and it's incurable. Well, number two, have you treated anybody with all of your cancer treatments that your research could maybe help mine, since it could be a form of cancer? I don't think so. Strike two. I said, you know, if anybody, any of your colleagues or anybody that has treated a patient or done research, he said, I'm sorry, Jerry, but I don't know if anybody that's doing anything about pulmonary fibrosis. It's almost unknown disease. Strike three, my heart goes to the floor. And I'm starting to cave in. That was my last straw. I struck out, and even I give up sometimes for a while. And I was giving up, and I sit on the phone. And I sit on the phone, and I didn't say anything. And he didn't say anything. And I don't know how long it was, but I'm suspecting that it was probably maybe as long as a couple of minutes, but it seemed like 5 or 10 minutes. And he spoke up first, the doctor. He said, "Jerry," and I think he could hear the anxiety in my voice.
Yes.
"Jerry, I tell you what, I don't think I can help you." I said, but if you're willing to send me 20 cc's of your blood, I'd be willing to analyze it. And if I can find a culprit," he called it, "I'd be willing to research it and just see if there's any way I could make any kind of a serum that might help you some. I mean, because right now, I don't believe there's any way that I can cure you." But he said, "But maybe I could come up with something that could improve the quality of your life somewhat and maybe extend it for a little while till maybe there's some research going on." And now I had hope again.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and you see, that's the thing. He didn't slam the phone down on you. You didn't slam the phone down on him. He realized that really he was your last hope, and he heard that in the silence and decided to, well, just because I'm not doing it doesn't mean I shouldn't be doing it. And he took that challenge. And I know, because you're still here today, that he succeeded in that challenge. So how about you tell us a little bit what he actually concocted for you and what he told you was the cause?
Well, to the day I die, that was a God connection setting me up. He led me to that doctor. And so here is another interesting aspect of the medical profession in this country. Now, I've never, ever gone anywhere and said, "Will you draw 20 cc's of my blood and give it to me? I want to do something with it." I've never done that. So when I went to 8 doctors in 2 weeks, and you know what? First thing they're going to say is, "Well, why do you want this blood?" Well, so then you got to explain it to them. And then all 8 of them turned me down. Well, no, that's outside the American Medical Association's guidelines. We can't do that. No one would say, "Hey, that's a waste of your time and money." Now I'm getting a little bit angry because I'm saying, "Hey, it's my time and it's my money."
Exactly.
You know, I don't have much time, you know. But my favorite one of all was, "You don't want to do that. That's voodoo medicine." And I'm getting angry, you know.
Yeah.
And so eventually, I'm checking other kind of things, and I decided to try like a homeopathic type, that type of a doctor, thinking that, you know, they're not as... But anyway, so I found one over in Fort Worth, Texas, and he agreed to it, so I sent it. So I'm finally able to send the blood for the first time. Now, the doctor in Germany, now, I did not sign a contract. I did not send him any money up front. And by what I'm going to explain to you, you tell me that we could ever do that in this country. And so I sent the blood to him. He spent about 6 weeks, and I got an email from him saying, "Jerry, I have found a type of fungus in your blood. I believe this is the problem, and now I'm going to research it." Okay, then he spent about between four and five months. Altogether, he spent almost 6 months to come up with a serum. Okay, when he did that, he then contacted me and said, "Now I have a serum, and I want you to send me 200 cc's of your blood to mix with the serum. Then I'm going to process that batch through an ozone oxidation machine that Europe has used for over 200 years, and most major hospitals around the world use it, and our FDA country hasn't approved it yet, you know, in 200 years. And so he did that. We went to Germany. I wanted to meet the doctor because I wanted to kind of like validate that this is really a real thing. I mean, a legitimate doctor and laboratory and these kind of things. So I went over and met him, the most wonderful guy I've ever met in the medical profession. Got the medicine. He explained how to do it, you know. So I took it for 8 months. My lung capacity had dropped to 63% and was dropping fast. And that's why when I had the diagnosis, my doctor had me, the pulmonary doctor had me go in the hospital for a lung biopsy, so he could really try to, you know, narrow down the time on it. And then he sent that biopsy to the Mayo Clinic's lab in Phoenix, Arizona. They analyzed it, and they confirmed his diagnosis. So, you know, I knew I didn't have much time. But at the end of it, and the doctor in Germany made me an eight-month badge. When I finished that eight-month badge, and I kept going back for my pulmonary function test, which is breathing into a computer to measure lung capacity, my lung capacity had stopped dropping. And my doctor here in Dallas says, I don't understand this. It's not possible that it stopped. Let me interject at this point. I have never to this day told my doctor in Dallas, Texas, that I went to Germany. Why?
Right.
Because every doctor I've talked to has told me I'm either lying or something, or misdiagnosed or whatever. So why bother? Why tell him so? Anyway, so then I got his report, and I sent that and another 20 cc's of blood to Germany. My doctor over there, he reviewed the report, analyzed my blood, and sent me an email exactly saying that, look, Jerry, this confirms that I believe I chose the right problem in causing your disease. I'm going to make another eight-month batch. I'm going to tweak it and make it stronger. And now let me tell you what he said that I would never hear in this country. He said, when you finish this second batch, you will be cured. I promise you. He said that. And so I took it for 8 months. I started feeling better just pretty rapidly. And so when I finished it, I went to my pulmonary doctor in Dallas, and he says, Jerry, you know, I have double-checked and triple-checked the computers. And he said, you're in remission, and it is not possible to be in remission. I said, well, then, am I or am I not? He said, yes, you're in remission. I said, could I be cured? Oh, no, that's impossible. I said, now, wait a minute. You tell me that it's impossible to go into remission or be cured from this disease, right? Yeah. Well, then how can I be in remission if I can't be cured? He says, well, I guess going in remission is a little bit less impossible. Don't that sound Mickey Mouse? You know, and we just, but my wife now we're happy. I mean, we're excited. And we keep pushing him for an answer. Now, come on, doctor. What? There's got to be some cause I'm in remission. He finally sat back in his chair, looked at this up at the ceiling, reached his two hands up toward the ceiling and said, well, I guess it's just one of those God things. And I said, yes, I believe you're right. And so I sent that report and another 20 cc blood to Germany. The doctor reviewed the report and analyzed the blood and everything. He emailed me and said, Jerry, the fungus is gone. You are cured. No ifs, no ands, no buts. Well, I went 1 year later on the anniversary, and without calling him, I sent another sample of my blood for him to test. He tested it, got back to me, and said, Jerry says, there is absolutely no change from a year ago, and you don't need to send me blood every year as long as you keep taking these breathing tests, because that will tell you if your capacity drops any. And if it doesn't drop any, you don't need to send the blood first to test it. Now it's been over 4 years, and I still haven't, gone down. I haven't changed. I feel better and better, and I feel better today than I did 10 years ago. And now I'm getting close to 9 years, and nobody believes that I was ever sick. But I, of course, know I am because I can't get out there and run. I can't overexert. If I overexert, I will run completely out of air, and I will fall down, and it'll take me 30 to 45, 50 seconds to get enough air back in me. So, my lung capacity stays around 57% now for 4 years. It's not dropping. And I'll tell you what, for my age, I can do anything that a normal 72-year-old person would want to do. And I live, and I love, and I'm so happy being alive and what I'm doing that I don't feel like I have it until I forget and try to exert too much.
Right. Well, Jerry, your story is just like so inspirational. I mean, for the fact that you would not give up, the fact that you, researched, you asked the divine to help you, and you listened, you watched for the signs, and you found this doctor who, for himself, this is such an amazing breakthrough for him as well, because now there is a cure. I had asked you to listen to Ingrid Erickson's show on the July 4th, which is all about allergies. And there she actually talks about that many things like fungi and limes and molds we carry around in our bodies, and we don't really notice it. You know, it can cause fatigue, it can cause some sideline things, and people never understand that that's what they've got within inside of them because doctors don't test for it, and they don't know what to do with it. And, you know, particular allergies actually can help the body cure itself of these diseases, you know, of these limes and the fungi and the molds. But if we leave them, then they manifest into something like the primary thrombosis, and also, you know, Lyme's manifest very often is mimicked by ALS, and that's what we have on next week, somebody who was diagnosed with that, but it was Lyme's. And I think people need to understand that they need to get themselves tested and, you know, that look to the alternative. You know, doctors can only do so much, they're only taught so much. And there are many other type of practices out there in the homeopathic and the alternative world that actually can help you understand your body and what's going on with it. And prevention is so much better than having to fight for the cure. But now that you have this cure and you are cured, you're the poster boy for this, right? So he's gone on to cure some other people. But you're telling me that the FDA is not recognizing this and that they're saying that it cannot be cured. They're not
exactly.
accepting
well, they
your
think,
cure.
I think they're treating me as a quack out there. And they wouldn't listen to one person because he's probably a quack, see. But, you know, the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation, when I tried for about 6 months to give them my story, send them all my medical reports, everything, trying to get them to become aware of it. I want to let them test me, let them try to use me in any way they could to prove anything or to help, and they weren't interested. Well, about 2 weeks ago, they announced that they're having a global, for Pulmonary Fibrosis, Global Awareness Day in Modena, Italy, September the 22nd, inviting from all the countries in the world, because they desperately want to try to do something, because they say as of today there is still no known cause or cure or treatment, and they don't know what to do about it, but they will not talk to me. Now, you know, a little side...
But you know what you should do? You and your doctor should just go to it. You and your doctor should just go to it with all the data that you have and stand up there, because if they won't listen, the people in the auditorium will. We've only got a couple of minutes left here,
okay.
Jerry. So, you know, I'm suggesting that you and your doctor, the German doctor, go over there and make yourself known. People will hear you because you're a walking case, they'll want to know, even if the others want to shut you up. So go let it be known. Jerry's website is www.jerrysmith.org, O-R-G. He's not just a writer of one book. He has lots of writings there and lots of information there. And folks, please do contact Jerry. So it's www.jerrysmith.org, O-R-G. And he'll fill you in on anything and everything that you need to know. And do listen to the July 4th Ingrid Erickson's on molds and et cetera, because you can actually prevent this. So it's really important, folks, that you take your own life into your own hands. Do you agree with that, Jerry? Don't lay
yes,
down and die.
Right, and one big factor. I know in my case that it was so helpful, and I'm so surprised by a doctor in Germany. I don't know if he's a Christian. I don't know anything about his faith. But he agreed with me. He said, you know, Jerry, when the doctors destroy your hope by saying go home and wait for the end because there's nothing we can do, that hope is a big factor. He said this, hope is a big factor in helping my serums to work better.
Right.
And so I'm saying don't give up hope. Don't let that doctor destroy your hope.
And that is the moral of the story, folks, is that just because somebody tells you something, you don't have to accept it. Because until you have laid down and died, you're still living. Fight for life. Thank you so much for coming on, Jerry. This has been absolutely wonderful. And
well, Sarah,
thank you.
I want to thank you so much for giving me this opportunity just to get this word out to people. I want people to hear it. They can help themselves.
Yes, they can. Well, thank you so much, Jerry. This was wonderful having you on the show. And you're an absolute gem. And, you know, kudos to you. Keep fighting. Keep getting that word out there. Okay, my darling.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Wow, I mean, what an impactful story. And next week I have Dr. Eric Cassol, who's coming on the show. Her husband was diagnosed with ALS, and it turned out to be Lyme's. and another preventable disease. She's written a book called Miracles for Daddy. She's coming along to tell us about her journey. And you know, folks, don't just accept the first diagnosis and give it. Always investigate. If it doesn't feel right, it isn't right. Don't forget to listen to my shows on Tuesday, your challenge at 5 p.m. Next week, I'll have a business guru on. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful week.